Hear the word of the Lord from Luke 9, 1 to 6. One day, Jesus called together his 12 disciples and gave them power and authority to cast out all demons and to heal all diseases. Then he sent them out to tell everyone about the kingdom of God and to heal the sick. Take nothing for your journey, he instructed them. Don't take a walking stick, a traveler's bag, food, money, or even a change of clothes. Wherever you go, stay in the same house until you leave that town. And if a town refuses to welcome you, shake its dust from your feet as you leave to show that you have abandoned those people to their fate. So they began their circuit of the villages, preaching the good news and healing the sick. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
You may be seated. Oh, good morning, everyone. Peace be with you. Welcome. If you are a guest or if you're visiting with us, my name's Jonah, and I'm one of the pastors here at Sojourn. Our mission as a church is to reach people with the good news of who Jesus is and what he's done for us, build each other up as his church, and then send each other to follow him as instruments of truth, beauty, and goodness. So thanks a lot for being here this morning. I have to take 2 points of pastoral privilege. That's where in, you know, older churches, pastors get to talk about things that they want to talk about and has nothing to do with the service. First, if you notice, the air conditioning is running. So we have 2 days of that a year. So I just want to bless the Lord and his servant, Dave from Strong Tower Mechanical. Shout out, Dave. I think our AC's demon possessed. So y'all keep praying. And then second, I think he left, but old Pastor Bobby Gillis became a grandpa yesterday. And so he said he wants to be called Peepaw Gillis. So you just call him Peepaw when you see him. I don't think that's true, but that's what I'm going to call him. So it's a good day. When you came in or around you, you might see little pieces of paper. It's a fabulous idea by Deacon Chrissy Smith that we're going to try. Is Chrissy in here? Chrissy's good at everything. Chrissy Smith, ladies and gentlemen. Deacon Chrissy Smith, Sojourn Kids Director. So if you feel like doing crowd participation time later, it's something, grab that and a pen. We'll talk about it later in the service. Something to maybe help you out, because what we're talking about might be a new idea for some of you. And we're trying to help you put some language on things that I think are going on in the text. So something that's important to know, especially with little ones around, every one of us in here was a little one at some point. We have babies in the room right now, just standing next to a baby. A baby was just born. We've got babies going on. When all of us were little, this is true for everyone. It doesn't matter if you were born in China or Pakistan or Indiana. When babies are little, the fundamental question that little ones are asking for is, am I safe? And they're looking around. You ever played the game where you make eye contact with a baby and it feels like you got them on a tractor beam where they're just locked in? One of the best parenting tips that was ever given to me is never break eye contact with the child. Let them break eye contact first. What those eyes are searching for is this a person I can trust? Is this someone I can rely on? Their brain, their souls are looking for an answer to the question, am I safe? That is the most fundamental need that all humans have, to know that we're okay, to know that we will be okay. And when we get anxious, when we get scared, have you noticed the decision-making capacity? You make worse decisions the more scared you are, typically. So we want to know that we're going to be okay, that we are safe to be seen, safe to be known, safe to be loved. This is some of why, in a huge universe, God puts humans on a little planet. Huge planet, but in the scope of the universe, a little planet. In this planet, he creates a country called Eden. And in this country called Eden, he makes a little tiny walled area called a garden. And that's where he puts us. A place with boundaries where we can be safe. And there, we're naked and unashamed. Seen, known, loved. This is what we were made for. This is what we're all longing for. But if you're older than like 3, you've probably learned that we live in a post-Eden world, right? Like the world isn't as safe as we want it to be. So in a lot of ways, we've all inherited the kind of the family self-protection schemes. What did Adam and Eve do when they realized that they were naked and ashamed? They hid, if you remember. They covered themselves. They weren't pleased. They didn't feel safe to be seen or known. And then they started blaming each other. So like our first parents, when we sin, when others sin against us, when we feel unsafe, we usually run to some form of hiding, of covering, or blaming. So what do I mean? I'm going to try to be a little bit specific. If you're like, what are we talking about right now? Some of you, at a very early age, you don't have to raise your hands. The room got so heavy in the 9 o'clock service, so we're going on a journey together. Some of you learned at an early age not to talk to your parents. Don't talk to them about how you're feeling. Don't talk to them about what you're doing. If you're scared or hurt, work it out. Rub some dirt on it. Don't talk to mom and dad. Some of you had families where we don't talk at all. We do things, but we don't really interact, or certainly we don't talk about how we're feeling or what we're wanting. Some of you learned that you shouldn't talk to friends. You shouldn't be open. You shouldn't be vulnerable. And that usually, how do you know if that's true of you? If that's been true of you, you probably have a really hard time asking for help now. So you don't ask for help. You don't share now. You don't reveal some of the secrets of who you are. Others of you, so in that scenario, you learned that I don't trust other people. So you hid internally and learned to rely on yourself. Some of you really want those people out there to tell you what a good job you're doing, to tell you that you're loved. You want them to tell you that you're safe. So what do? You work hard. You perform. You prove. You make a name for yourself. You get strong and aggressive so that you can, all the stuff you do out there, the people out there will tell you what a good boy you are. What a good girl you are. Look at what a great job you're doing. These are all very normal, by normal I mean common ways that we reach for something to try to feel safe. It's a tool that we rely on to know that we're okay. If you are in this room, you have learned a way to feel safe. You have a strategy for managing your anxiety and uncertainty. Very few of us can name it. Very few of us are aware of it. It happens automatically. You're not necessarily thinking about doing it. And I think even fewer of us, but I hope some of you are here, are awake enough to your own life to be a little bit skeptical about whether or not the strategies for self-protection you've learned are actually working. So to be real clear, I don't know if I'm ever real clear as I know how to be, some common tools that we develop for self-protection, for self-reliance, would be things like shun vulnerability, never show weakness, don't ask for help, overachieve, work hard, produce, perform, demonize the other side so you can feel better about your own hypocrisies, manage other people's perception of you to manage your own feelings of shame, inadequacy, fear over what's going to happen in the future. The specifics of what that might look like will be different based on who we are and where we've lived, but the good news, some of the good news about that difficult reality is that these are exactly the kinds of people that Jesus called to follow him. What I just described is like very old Christianity. It started in the Garden of Eden, reaching for something else so that we can feel better about who we are. These are exactly the kinds of people Jesus came to save. And perhaps most surprisingly, these are the kinds of people Jesus sent on mission. Verse 1, we read that one day Jesus called together his 12 disciples and gave them power and authority to cast out all demons and to heal all disease. But the power that Jesus has is now the power the disciples have. And these disciples, these 12, become known as the apostles. And that apostle just means sent ones. So he has this large group of followers. Some loved him, some hated him, some were curious, some were critical. A smaller group of committed followers called the disciples. A smaller group called the 12. And now the 12 are his apostles, his sent ones. And now they have all the power that Jesus has. And I can't help but wonder, what did it feel like for them to hear that? Was this like a pre-Pentecost moment? They suddenly felt strong and powerful. And, well, I just know I'm not the only one who has sometimes wished for more power, more control, more authority. Wouldn't that make you feel safe? Wouldn't that make you feel strong? Haven't you ever looked at those people in power and thought to yourself, this would all go so much better if it was people like me who had power instead of people like them? I don't know how many of you are into the Lord of the Rings, but we're all the ones looking at the ring thinking, you know, I know it went bad for them. I could hold the ring. I could carry the ring. I could do a good job. And I think that's probably the most American strategy for managing fear and insecurity. More power, more control. I don't know if you've seen it. We're 9 chapters into the Gospel of Luke now. But it's very important, if you want to make the least little bit of sense of the Christian life, that you see how different the power of Jesus is than the power of the world is. When we think of power and control, we think hierarchy. We think, who's the boss? What has the boss done in 9 chapters of the Gospel of Luke so far? The power of Jesus is always power with people and for people. World power is always power over people and against people. The power of Jesus is the power to submit, to serve, to sacrifice. The power of the world is to dominate, to direct, to control. Jesus's power is always with people and for people. One kind of power seeks healing. The other kind of power seeks control. Look at what Jesus sends them to do with all of this divine power. He sent them out to tell everyone about the kingdom of God and to heal the sick. What would you do if I gave you power? Divine power of God. What does Jesus tell his followers to do? Announce good news and heal hurting people. I know in this part of the country, words like mission can have a little bit of a visceral effect. Here we go. Like, what's that other word that we don't like talking about? There's a lot of evangelism. Yeah, we're going to go do evangelism, guys. A couple of very important things to learn about the mission of Jesus, just from these couple of verses. First thing, you got to see that the mission of Jesus is the mission of his people. We can't make the mistake of thinking that the mission is over at the death and resurrection of Jesus. Could Jesus have satisfied, fully accomplished his mission all by himself? Could he theoretically have done it? The correct answer is yes, please. Yes. Anyone ever have a dad, or maybe you're a dad, and you've had a broken toilet at home, and you ask your 6-year-old if he will help you fix the toilet. Could dad have fixed that toilet without the 6-year-old? Yes. Are those little tykes, hammers, and screwdrivers actually helping the process? No, but good dads know how to invite their children into something. And this is what Jesus does. The mission, at the end of chapter 9, the story's going to take a radical shift. Chapter 9, verse 51, it says Jesus' face turns towards Jerusalem, which if you know the story, it means he's preparing for his death. What he talks about is, so all of this divine cosmic power is soon going to suffer and die. And he's preparing his disciples for life after him. And Luke is preparing the readers for life after the resurrection of Jesus. The mission of Jesus continues past his death and resurrection through his people. If you call on the name of the Lord, if you trust Jesus, you are part of the mission of Jesus. So the mission of Jesus is the mission of his people. He passes it on through his apostles. And second, you have to notice that the mission of Jesus is the mission to people. Not just of his people, but to his people. And if you guys wanted to have a long church service, I'd be happy to go on an extended rant about this topic, this point. But maybe we can hang out afterwards if you want to hear me get fiery about it. But so many organizations and churches and people who claim the name of Jesus are far more about the brand or the personality than they are about the people. What do I mean? When a church calls another church to hire the person that just did the thing rather than calling the police, that's brand management. When an organization hurts someone and makes them sign a non-disclosure agreement rather than talking to the police, when we elevate the priorities of the organization and the brand rather than the well-being of real people, we have forsook the mission of Jesus. When we say we would do the right thing, but think about what it would do to the mission. The mission of Jesus is mission to people. And notice he sends his apostles to share good news to people. Some are tempted to be like, oh, we just got to say right things. We got to announce good news. We got to share information. Some of us are more doctrinally bent. Jesus won't let us stay there, though, because he says, and heal their sick. You have to have good words, and you have to have good works. This is what we're going to announce good news. And we're going to heal their hurting. Imagine how much anxiety might be calmed if you knew you were headed to a walled city that was eternally safe. He shows us, he tells his disciples, show them what the kingdom of God means by healing their hurting. Because the mission of Jesus is the mission of his people to his people. And the last thing, just I've already said it, so I'm just going to repeat it. Maybe most obviously, you have to see that the people of Jesus now have the power of Jesus. Can you imagine? The power to heal any disease, the power to cast out demons, the power to raise the dead. When you think self-protection scheme, some of you know what it feels. You know what I mean when I say, I want to be wanted. Some of you know what that feels like. Oh, if more people would applaud. Oh, if more people would want to be around me. The idea of wielding this kind of power, my immediate thought is how big our church would get if I had this kind of power. Can you imagine how many people would come? Can you imagine how many people would want to see the show? Can you imagine how famous we would be? And for some of us, for me, that sounds enticing. What might happen to you if you had this kind of power? If you had this kind of authority? And I don't know, maybe I shouldn't say this kind of stuff in front of you people. I just wonder how many healings I would perform before Jesus did that, became I did that. You know what I'm saying? Before Jesus did this miracle, before, you know, I am pretty special. See, the problem, there's many problems, but some of the big problems with our self-protection schemes, our self-reliance strategies, is it bends ourselves inward. We are created for trust and dependence. But these things we reach for lead us to usually just trust ourselves. Now Jesus has given his apostles divine authority, divine power. But how can he help them to remain humble, dependent, and trusting? How can he keep all of this power from distorting them, twisting them, making them something other than he desires them to be? His solution, it's like, shouldn't be surprising at all, but it's just so beautiful and simple and profound. He gives them all of this power, and then he says to them, take nothing for your journey. This is really interesting. Nothing here is the Greek word maides. Maides. You can say that to your friends and feel smart. Here's a reason I like dictionaries. They give you lovely definitions. The definition of the Greek word maides is to there not being any, which is to say the Greek word maides means nothing. Nothing, nothing. That was a language joke. It means nothing. There's no way around it. It means nothing. You can almost feel the shock on the apostles because of Jesus has to follow it up and really explain it to them. He says, don't take a walking stick. Don't take a traveler's bag. Don't take food. Don't take money. Don't even take a change of clothes. Wherever you go, stay in the same house until you leave town. Which house? Whichever one lets you. Literally, he says, take nothing, and he means it. To try to give you a sense of what this would be like for us, it'd be like if I said, hey guys, here's what we're gonna do as a church. Afterwards, we've got 15 vans out there. We're all gonna pile in. We're gonna leave all of our money, all of our cell phones, all of our contacts, all of our food. We're not gonna take any luggage, and we're all gonna drive to California. No GPS, no emergency snack money. What are we gonna do if we go to Buc-ee's? I don't know. A walking stick, a bag, food. These things Jesus lists were the travelers' most common tools for preparation and protection. These were the things wise people would have taken with them to safely go on the journey. A walking stick was used for support and self-defense, to fend off criminals, to fend off wild animals. The walking staff was how they would have physically kept themselves safe. Jesus says, leave it behind. A traveler's bag. This is the bag for all the what ifs. This is the spare tire. This is the tire patch. This is the extra quart of oil. This was their tool for future protection. This is where we'll put the things that may keep us safe depending on what happens out there. You can do this with all of them. Think about money. Like, money is the universal tool for solving problems. If worse comes to worst, we'll spend our way out of it. We at least got to have a credit card so that if something really bad happens, we can swipe the card. How does Jesus temper the temptation of power? He sends his apostles out in the most vulnerable way possible. Leave your tools of self-reliance, self-defense, self-protection. Leave them at home. Learn to live at the mercy of those around you. Learn to live at the mercy of God. Stay in as vulnerable a place as you can. Gosh. Be as physically limited as possible. Just as countercultural today as it was back then. For them and for most of us, power is something we achieve. It's something we earn. It's something that's out there and we go get it. But in the kingdom of God, power is given. It's something that we receive. And we are to wield it from a posture of trust and dependence. The scriptures reveal to us a stewardship vision of power, which is to say all power is on loan. It's not ours. So how would you treat this power that belongs to somebody else? Probably the same way you would treat that fancy car that you borrowed. That's somebody else's. When your friend lets you stay at their lake house that you could never afford, you treat it different. I want you to really consider this in light of what Jesus has sent them to do. Filled with divine power, he says, make an announcement, share good news, and then heal their hurting. There's nothing in there about growing influence. There's nothing in there about, hey guys, we really need to get the numbers up before I get to Jerusalem, so. Nothing about increasing crowd sizes or building a platform. In some ways, it seems much the opposite. Look at his final instruction. If a town refuses to welcome you, make a YouTube video about how awful they are and win the culture war. If a town refuses to welcome you, shake its dust from your feet as you leave, to show you've abandoned those people to their fate. He doesn't say win them over. He doesn't say engage in an argument. He doesn't say fight a war. He says leave. If they don't listen, if they don't want it, move on. Announce your good news. Heal their sick. And if they don't want it, move on. The apostles are not being sent out looking for greener pastures, greater ministry opportunities, larger influence. They're not being sent out to make a name for themselves. They're given authority and power to announce good news and to heal hurting people. Jesus' mission is our mission too. It's a mission for people, to people. If you are a Christian, you got to know you have great power and great authority. When you walk into a room, royalty walks in with you. You are a son or daughter of the Most High Living God. Beloved, he has not given you a spirit of fear or timidity, but of power, of love, and of self-control. When you walk in a room, you have great authority and great power. But the way we are to wield that power could not be more foreign to this present age. Because our power is wielded from a posture of trust, dependence, vulnerability. Imagine how much you would learn to rely on others, including God, if you were to travel across the country with no food, no money, no supplies. I think this is the posture required to stay whole and holy on the mission of Jesus. When someone doesn't welcome us or the good news, we move on. We move on to the poor, the oppressed, the vulnerable. So that's the sermon introduction. I had to say all of that so I could say the two things I want to say to you. And the two things I want to say to you are questions I want you to think about. The first question I want you to wrestle with is, what is Jesus asking you to leave behind on your journey? He sent all of us out. What is he asking you to leave behind on your journey? This is where the pieces of paper come in. If some of you would be served by writing something down, by having something you can hold. There's a picture on the paper of a staff, a bag, and money. Common tools of self-reliance. Common tools of self-protection. So a couple of questions to get your juices rolling, and we'll let some space linger. If you want to write it down, or if you want to spend some time later, I want you to ask yourself, what do I reach for to try and feel safe? You may not even realize you're doing it. Think back the last time you were anxious, the last time you were scared. What do you grasp for saying, oh, this will fix it? Could be a person, could be a habit, could be a restaurant, could be a song. What do you reach for to try and feel safe? Could be a gun. If you have an answer to that, you can write that under the staff. Common tool of self-defense. What do you reach for to try and feel safe? What do you rely on to secure your future? When you look out there and said, I need this to make it there, you could write that under the bag. What do you think you need to make sure your future is going to work out okay? What do you trust to get you out of this mess? Maybe you could write that under the money, the kind of oh no handle, the last ditch, worst comes to worst, this is how I'll get out of it. The things you write may not be bad things, but I want you to consider whether or not they may be childish things. And I mean that in a very innocent, kind way. It's like, listen, if you developed a strategy when you were 7 to stay safe when you were 7, it was probably quite clever of you and probably worked really well. But if you're trying to be 45 the same way you were 5, if you're trying to be 75 the same way you tried to be 5, it starts actually getting in the way. It's possible that these strategies are coming from a scared place in you, not a trusting place in you. Jesus is sending you to announce good news, a mission to relieve pain, a mission to heal wounds and to bind up the brokenhearted. And you need to know that some of your strategies will get in the way of that mission. Some of you need to wake up to the reality that they are not working anymore. So how is Jesus inviting you to lay down your self-protection and trust him? What is he asking you to leave home on your journey of following him? That's the first question. The second question is, do you want to watch God take care of you? Do you want to watch God take care of you? There's kind of two ways we could look at our hypothetical journey to California. One, which I think is where most of us probably would be. One says, how in the world are we ever going to make it to California with no supplies? I'm good on 64. I'll take that west. But if that doesn't get me all the way to California, I don't know what I'm going to do then. How in the world? That's understandable, and I think that's how most of us would respond. But that is a road of self-reliance, self-trust. And I want you to know there's another way of asking the question, another way of responding to it. One way says, how in the world will we make it to California? There's another way that says something more like, isn't it going to be amazing to see how Jesus gets us to California? You know the wild thing about living at the mercy of God? Do you know what you'll experience if you live at the mercy of God? The mercy of God. If you put yourself in a position to be provided for by God, do you know what God will do for you? He will provide for you. Do you want to know what it's like to have the living God of the universe take care of you? Do you want to know what it's like to have the living God of the universe provide for you? And if your answer is yes, you're going to have to step out of the boat. Oh, there's storms. This doesn't make any sense. You don't walk on water. Hey, hey. How many of the disciples wish they knew what it was like to feel Jesus pull them up out of the water and to stand on waves? You think the clueless disciples knew what to say when they went into a hostile foreign village? I don't know what I would say. Right! Exactly! Do you know what will happen if you put yourself in a position to share good news with someone and you have no idea what to say? Well, beloved, God will tell you what to say. If you don't believe, if you think this is just some like hyped up preacher thing, go talk to a Christian in here who has gray hair and ask them to tell you a story of a time when they were like, and I don't know where the words came, I just saw these words come out of my mouth and I never thought to say that and I said it. And then this other person told me that's exactly what they needed to hear and they'd been praying that somebody would say that. This happens. This is regular Christianity. This is not radical. This is just regular, normal Christianity. We go from a posture of trust and dependence. In a few verses, the disciples who have no idea what's going on and they don't want Jesus to die and they're still thinking they're about to have a political military overthrow, they watch Jesus feed probably 10 or 12,000 people with a child's sack lunch. How are we going to feed them, Jesus? What are we going to do, Jesus? Do you want to see God take care of you? Can you imagine how God will provide for you as you learn to trust him? Who is he inviting you to share good news with? I don't know what to say. Me neither. I don't know. Show up and see what happens. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to tell you either. Show up. See what happens. I know you don't know what to do, and I know you don't know what to say, but try this thought on. How exhilarating will it be for you when God gives you the words to say and tells you what to do? I can promise you this because God has promised you this. God will lead you and he will bring you all the way home. The mission of Jesus is the mission of his people. It's our mission. It's your mission. So how is he inviting you to trust him on the journey? If you're willing and able, stand with me and we'll pray.